The basic nature of man is that he wants to get his own way. Man is born with a sinful bent that includes selfishness. He wants what he wants when he wants it. How people will get along with one another and form a society will be dependent on the social mores that are established among them. There has to be some structure of what is right and what is wrong. But what happens when each man decides for himself and does what is right in his own eyes? Proverbs 16:25 says, "There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." We will see the truth of that proverb today in our study of the book of Judges. It is an answer that should give pause to every government as it wrestles with the extent and limits of personal freedoms of those within its society. Before we start our study of the book itself, it is important to note that Judges is written thematically in a selective chronology. There is variation in the time sequences and the areas of the nation in view. It covers the period between about 1406 B.C., when Joshua concluded his conquest of the land, and 1055 B.C., when Samson died. Judges was written after the establishment of Saul's monarchy, Judges 17:6, 18:1, 19:1, 21:25, but prior to David's capture of Jerusalem from the Jebusites. 2 Samuel 5:5-9 talks about that. The purpose of the book of Judges was to give a defense of the establishment of the monarchy by showing the utter failure of the theocracy to obey the Lord through the judges. The main reason for that failure was that every man did what was right in his own eyes. This resulted in disobedience to God's law. Judges can be divided into three main sections. First, causes for the period of the judges, chapter 1 through chapter 3, verse 6. This section explains the reasons for the failure of the theocracy. Second, the cycles of judges, chapter 3, verse 7 through 16:31. This traces that failure throughout the geographical regions of Israel, showing that the failure was widespread and not limited to just a few errant tribes. And the third part is consequences of disobeying the Lord, chapters 17 through 21. These chapters give two stories showing how depraved the people had become in their idolatry and immorality, which resulted in anarchy. Throughout the book, we will find that sin always leads to suffering, but repentance leads to deliverance, just as Moses and Joshua had warned them. Numbers chapters 26, Deuteronomy 27:28, and Joshua 23:24. Now, the first reason for the failure of the theocracy and the need for the judges was the incomplete obedience of the people in driving out and destroying the people that had been in the land. The Lord had very specifically stated that the Hittite, Amorite, Canaanite, Perizzite, Hivite, and the Jebusite people were to be utterly destroyed because of their iniquity and abominations. Genesis 15:16, Exodus 23:23, Leviticus 18:24-27, Deuteronomy 20:17-18 all talk about that. But it also would be done little by little until they would become fruitful and take possession of the land, so the wild beasts would not become too numerous on them. That's stated in Exodus 23:30 and Deuteronomy 7:22. However, after Joshua's death, the tribes did not completely follow the Lord's direction. Judah and Simeon agreed to go together to conquer the remaining people in their lands, and so they did have victory over the Canaanites and Perizzites in their lands and conquered the cities of Jerusalem, Debir, Hebron, Zephath, Horma, Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ekron, along with the surrounding territories. However, they took Adoni-Bezek captive instead of killing him, and they remained in the hill country because they did not drive out the inhabitants of the valleys. Chapter 1, verses 1 through 20. Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites and instead live with them. And while the house of Joseph did capture Bethel, also known as Luz, Manasseh did not take possession of Beth Shean, Tanakh, Dor, Eblaim, Megiddo, or Gezer, so that the Hittites and Canaanites continued to live among them. When they were strong, they put them to forced labor instead of destroying them as the Lord had commanded. The same was true for the tribes of Zebulun, Asher, and Naphtali. Dan did not fare even that well, for the Amorites controlled the valleys and forced Dan to remain in the hill country. This failure brought the rebuke of the Lord, recorded in Judges 1, verses 1 through 5. Now the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, "I brought you up from Egypt and led you into the land which I had sworn to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed me. What is this you have done? Therefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become as thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare to you. It came about when the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the sons of Israel that the people lifted up their voices and wept. And so they named that place Bochim, which means weepers, and there they sacrificed the Lord. The Lord would do just as He had warned them in Numbers 33:55 and Joshua 23:13. Well, the people served the Lord during all the years that Joshua and the elders who survived him were alive, but a generation arose after them that did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which He had done for Israel. Verses 6 through 10, chapter 2. They then violated the Lord's commands concerning serving false gods and followed the gods of the people in the land who were around them, and they bowed down to Baal and Asherah. When this happened, the Lord would turn against them in His anger and fulfill the warnings He had given them, resulting in them being severely distressed because they were punished, they were plundered, they were sold into the hands of their enemies. Verses 11 through 15. However, the punishment was not only just punished for their sins, but it also had a purpose in turning them back to the Lord. When they would turn back and cry out to Him, the Lord was true to His promise, and being moved to pity by their groaning because of their oppressions, He would deliver them by raising up a judge to deliver them. Verses 16 and 18. Now, these were not judges in the sense that we think of them as those who decide the law between two parties in a lawsuit, but rather these are individuals whom God would raise up to be the head over some portion of Israel. They would then direct the nation to make peace or war and lead the armies over whom they presided. They would also reign with sovereign power to administer justice the remaining years of their life. However, the cycle would then repeat itself because even while the judges... Because even while the judge was alive, the people did not always listen. And when the judge died, they would turn away from the Lord and act corruptly, disobeying the commands of the Lord and bowing down to the gods of the surrounding nations. Verses 17 and 19 through 20. The Lord would then allow those surrounding nations to suppress them as the means of chastisement. It was because of this the Lord would no longer drive out before them the nations which Joshua had left when he died. They would become a test whether Israel would walk in the ways of the Lord or not. Verses 20 through 23. Among the nations left for this purpose were the five lords of the Philistines, all the Canaanites, the Sidonians, and the Hivites that lived in Mount Lebanon. Judges 3, verses 1 through 4. Now, a major reason that these heathen nations were able to influence Israel is because they intermarried with them. Now, this was a direct violation of the Lord's command in Deuteronomy 7, verse 3, that they were not to intermarry with them. The consequences came about just as the Lord had warned, and it resulted in their children being taught foreign ways and to turn from the Lord to serve the false gods. That, in turn, would result in the Lord cursing them. The cycles began with them not fully obeying the Lord to drive out the nations that were there and then allowing them to remain. That resulted in Israel being influenced by them, so they began to worship the false gods of those nations. Then they even intermarried, and that made the influence much stronger. When they turned from the Lord to serve the idols, the Lord would turn from them and allow the curses they had been warned about to befall them, resulting in their being oppressed. When they would repent and turn back to the Lord, He would deliver them and bring back their blessings. The next section of the book of Judges traces the cycle of disobedience and idolatry, followed by oppression, resulting in repentance, and then deliverance through the various judges the Lord raised up. This section is neither an exhaustive nor strict chronological account of what God did. It is arranged somewhat geographically to demonstrate the widespread nature of Israel's rebellion. They were in need of a king because they were not faithful to the Lord when they did what was right in their own eyes. In Judges 3, verses 7 through 11, we're told about Othniel. After Joshua and the elders had served with him and died, the sons of Israel had done evil. They forgot the Lord. They served the Baals and the Asherah. The Lord then allowed Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, to oppress the sons of Israel for 8 years. The people finally cried out to the Lord, and He raised up Othniel to judge and lead them to war. Othniel was from the tribe of Judah, was the nephew of Caleb. The Lord gave the king of Mesopotamia into his hand, and the land had rest for 40 years while Othniel was still alive. Well, after Othniel died, the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel. He made an alliance with Ammon and Amalek, and together they defeated Israel and possessed the city of the palm trees in Jordan Valley. Eglon oppressed Israel for 18 years. Finally, the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord, and he raised up Ehud from the tribe of Benjamin, a left-handed man. Now, Ehud developed a plan to kill Eglon. He made an 18-inch, two-edged sword for himself, bound it to his right thigh under his cloak. Now, since this is opposite of where most people would put a weapon, no one noticed it. He then went to Eglon to present their tribute to him. Now, after the tribute was presented, Ehud said to the king, "I have a secret message for you, O king." Well, the king had everyone else leave the room so he could hear it. Then Ehud came close to where the king was sitting and said, "I have a message from God for you." When the king arose, Ehud took the sword and he thrust it into the king's belly and killed him. Eglon, the king, was so fat that the handle went in after the blade and Ehud could not draw the sword out. Ehud then escaped through the vestibule and shut and locked the doors to the roof chamber behind him. By the time the king's servants had figured out something was wrong and found the dead king, Ehud had escaped across the Jordan to Syria in the hill country of Ephraim, verses 15 through 25. Ehud then gathered the sons of Israel and told them, "Pursue them, for the Lord has given your enemies, the Moabites, into your hands." And so they descended from the hill country, seized the fords of the Jordan, and struck down 10,000 Moabites and subdued Moab. The land was then undisturbed for 8 years, verses 26 through 30. The next judge was Shamgar, Judges chapters 3, verse 31. Now he came sometime after Ehud, and he saved Israel from oppression by the Philistines. He struck down 600 of them with an ox goad, that's a stick used to prod oxen to move. All three of these judges, Othniel, Ehud, and Shamgar, were from the tribes in the south, and the Lord used them to give Israel peace. The next section of Judges, chapter 4, verse 1 through 5:31, deal with the areas to the north. The first chapter, Judges 4, deals with Deborah and Barak. Sometime after Ehud died, Israel once again did evil in the sight of the Lord. This time, the Lord gave them into the hands of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. You might recall that Hazor is north of the Sea of Galilee, just west of the Jordan River. Joshua had destroyed the city in the initial conquest, but now it is rebuilt and once again a stronghold of the Canaanites. They had a strong army that included iron chariots, so they oppressed Israel for 20 years. Finally, the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord and revealed himself through the prophetess Deborah. She lived between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. She summoned Barak, who was from the tribe of Naphtali, and told him, "Behold, the Lord, the God of Israel, has commanded, go and march to Mount Tabor. Take with you 10,000 men from the sons of Naphtali and from the sons of Zebulun. And I will draw out for you Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, and with his chariots and his many troops the river Kishon, and I will give them into your hand." However, Barak refused to do it unless Deborah went with him. Deborah agreed to go, but also told Barak that because of this, he would not receive the honor for the victory, for the Lord would give Sisera, the commander of the Canaanite army, into the hands of a woman. They then gathered an army at Mount Tabor in the northern end of the valley of Jezreel, and Sisera gathered his army, including his 900 chariots, in the valley below Mount Tabor. But the Lord routed him, and they fell by the edge of the sword, so that none were left except Sisera, who fled on foot. With his army destroyed, Jabin, the king of the Canaanites, could not withstand Israel, and so he was also destroyed. Meanwhile, Sisera was killed by Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. The honor then was given to her in the victory song of Deborah and Barak in Judges 5, and so the lands remained undisturbed for 40 years. In Judges chapter 6 through 10, we have the central campaign. First was Gideon, Judges chapter 6 through 8. The sons of Israel turned once again from the Lord and did what was evil in his sight. This time the Lord gave them into the hands of Midian for 7 years. They would come up from the south yearly and raid Israel to destroy and take what had been harvested. It was so bad the Israelites resorted to living in caves and dens in the mountains. They finally cried out to the Lord, and he sent a prophet to tell them that they had not obeyed him by fearing the gods of the Amorites. The Lord also sent an angel to Gideon, who was from the tribe of Manasseh, on the west side of the Jordan. The angel revealed to Gideon that God had chosen him to be the one that would deliver Israel from the Midianites. To be brief, Gideon was not a man of great confidence, and God used a series of miracles and events to encourage him to rise up and do what God commanded him. First, the angel that gave him the message placed the meal Gideon had offered him on a rock. The angel then touched the meat and the bread with the end of his staff, and fire sprang up from the rock and consumed the food, and then the angel also vanished. This gave Gideon enough encouragement to to pull down the altar of Baal and cut down the Asherah, and then withstand those who were upset by it afterwards. Chapter 6, verses 25 through 32. Next, the Midianites came up and camped in the valley of Jezreel. Gideon sent messengers throughout Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali to gather to him. Gideon wanted confidence that what he was doing was from the Lord, so he prayed that God would make a fleece he left on the threshing floor wet with dew, while all the ground around it would be dry. And the Lord did so. Then he prayed the next day that the Lord would do the opposite, and the Lord did so. Verses 36 through 40. Well, after an army of 32,000 had gathered to him at the spring of Harod, the Lord told Gideon that it was too many, and that anyone that was afraid was to be sent home. The Lord then said to the 10,000 that were left, there were still too many. So he reduced that number to 300 by the way they drank water. They were facing the combined armies of Amalek and Midian, which were described as numerous as locusts and as the sand on the seashore. The Lord made it clear that he alone was responsible for the victory. The Lord had Gideon send a spy into their camp, who then overheard one of the men telling his dream, which the other one interpreted as the sword of Gideon, concluding that God had given Midian and all the camp into his hands. Verses 9 through 14. When Gideon heard the report, he bowed and worshipped the Lord, and then called on his band of 300 to arise, for the Lord had given their enemy into their hands. He divided the 300 into three companies, and each man was given a trumpet and a pitcher with a torch inside. They then spread around the outskirts of the enemy camp. Just as the middle watch began, it would be about 10 p.m., Gideon had each man break the pot, revealing the lit torch inside, and then blow their trumpets and then shout, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon!" The result was pandemonium in the enemy camp, so those in the camp fought each other and then fled southeast across the Jordan River. Gideon sent messengers alerting the men of Ephraim, as well as the rest of the men from Naphtali, Asher, and Manasseh. Ephraim captured and killed Oreb and Zeeb, the two leaders of Midian, while Gideon and his 300 continued the pursuit of Zebah and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian. During the pursuit, the men of both Succoth and Penuel refused to help Gideon by even giving him and his men some food. They lived in fear of the Midianites instead of the fear of the Lord. Gideon and his men continued their pursuit anyway. They finally caught up and they destroyed the remaining 15,000 of an army that only a short time before had numbered 135,000. After this, the Israelites wanted Gideon to rule over them, but he refused that either he or his son would do so, for the Lord was to rule over them. Chapter 8, verses 22 and 23. And the land was undisturbed for 40 years in the days of Gibeon. Next, in chapter 8 and 9, is Abimelech. As soon as Gideon was dead, the sons of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals. The evil was made worse by Abimelech, one of Gideon's 70 sons, who conspired to make himself the ruler. He murdered the rest of his brothers, except for the youngest son, Jotham, who had hid himself. The end result of them doing what was right in their own eyes was turmoil and civil war with Ephraim until Abimelech and those in Shechem were killed. Tola was next, Judges chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Tola was a man from the tribe of Issachar, and he was used by the Lord to save Israel. He lived in the hill country of Ephraim. He judged Israel for 23 years. Next was Jair, Judges 10, 3 through 5. He was from the region of Gilead, where the tribe of Gad had settled. He judged Israel for 22 years. Judges chapter 10 through 12 deals with the eastern side of the nation, the eastern campaign. So after Jair died, Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord by going after the gods of the heathen people among and around them. The Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines and the Ammonites. Those on the east side of the Jordan were crushed by the Ammonites for 18 years. They even crossed the Jordan to attack Judah, Benjamin, and Ephraim. Finally, the people cried out to the Lord, and after being rebuked by him, they repented. Chapter 10, verses 6 through 16. This time the Lord allowed them to pick their own leader, and they picked Jephthah. He was an illegitimate son of a man from Gilead and a harlot. He had been driven out from among his relatives. He was a rash man, and he had worthless fellows gathered around him. Chapter 10, verses 17 through chapter 11, verse 10. Yet despite his shortcomings, Jephthah was willing to fight, and he knew Israel's history and their God-given right to the land. Chapter 11, verses 12 through 28. Jephthah defeated Ammon and subdued them. This should have been a cause of rejoicing for all, but Ephraim was jealous and contended with him that he had not included them in the battle with Ammon. Perhaps they wanted to share in the spoils. But the result was a war between them and the defeat of Ephraim, with 42,000 of them being killed in the war. Jephthah then judged Israel for 6 years. Chapter 12, verses 1 through 15. Judges chapter 12, verses 8 through 15 deal with the central area of nation and three different judges. Ibzan, Judges 12, 8 through 10, was from Bethlehem. He followed Jephthah. He judged Israel for 7 years before his death. Then Elon, Judges 12, 11 through 12, was a Zebulunite. He was next. He judged Israel for 10 years before he died. And then Abdon, Judges 12, 13 through 15, was also from the land of Ephraim, and he judged Israel for 8 years. Judges 13 through 16 deal with the Western campaign, specifically with Samson. Again, the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, this time resulting in him giving them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. Manoah and his wife were from Zorah in the northern Judah, and God promised them a son. He was to be set aside from birth to be dedicated to the Lord as a Nazarite. Chapter 13, verses 1 through 25. But Samson turned out to be a man who did what was right in his own eyes instead of following the Lord. And yet the Lord used Samson anyway. Samson sought a wife from the Philistines, which was in direct violation of God's commands, but God used that to create an escalating conflict between Samson and the Philistines before he could ever actually take his wife. Among Samson's deeds were killing 30 men of Ashkelon to get their clothes in order to fulfill a bet. Chapter 14, verses 1 through 19. He set the fields of the Philistines on fire because his wife had been given to another man. Chapter 14, verse 20 through chapter 15, verse 5. He then slaughtered many of them and then killed another 1,000 with the jawbone of a donkey when they tried to take him captive. Chapter 15, verses 6 through 16. He carried the city gates of Gaza all the way to Hebron, and he judged Israel for 20 years. His downfall was his lust for a woman named Delilah. Though she continually lied to him and demonstrated she worked for the Philistines, he kept going back to her until the secret of his strength was revealed, and then compromised so that he could be taken captive, blinded, and made a slave to grind corn. During a great sacrifice to their god Dagon, the Philistines had Samson brought in to make sport of him. This gave Samson the ability to carry out his final great act of strength when he pushed the supporting pillars over, causing the building to collapse and kill those inside as well as the 3,000 that were on the roof. But even that last effort was for the revenge of his eyes and not as a judgment of the Philistines for their evil, though God used it that way anyways. God is able to accomplish his purposes even by those who do what is right in their own eyes. Judges 17 through 21 deal with the consequences of disobedience. It's a section in which two stories are given that show how depraved the people had become in their idolatry and immorality, resulting in anarchy. In Judges 17 through 18, we have the story of Micah and the Danites. It's a story of idolatry. The first story is in Judges 17 through 18, and it's a story of idolatry. To quickly summarize it, there was a man named Micah. He lived in the hill country of Ephraim. He stole 1,100 pieces of silver from his mother, but he returned them when his mother cursed because of the theft. His mother then dedicated the silver to the Lord by having it fashioned into a graven image and a molten image, though that was in direct violation of the Lord's commands. Micah eventually consecrated one of his sons to be a priest in his home and serve at his shrine, which had multiple idols. This was in violation of God's laws and idolatry, as well as his laws about only the Levites being priests. Eventually, Micah does get a young Levite to live with him and be his priest. Micah's conclusion was that the Lord would bless him, since now he had a Levite as a priest, chapter 17, 1 through 13. Meanwhile, the tribe of Dan did not take the land allotted to them in the south, spelled out in Joshua 19, 40 through 48, where they were supposed to be, and Judges 1, 34. So they decided to move to a land in the far north, which they thought they'd be able to conquer, chapter 18, 1 through 13. Now in the process, they passed by Micah's home, they stole his graven image, the ephod, the household idols, and the molten image. They also convinced the Levite to go with them to be the priest of a tribe instead of just to one man. This priest was an opportunist and an idolater. When Micah objected that they had taken away the gods which I made and his priests, chapter 17, verse 24, they threatened him so that he returned back to his house. The Danites then set up for themselves the graven image, the idols, and the molten image, chapter 18, verses 14 through 31. They had rejected the law of the Lord in order to do what was right in their own eyes, and that included flagrant idolatry, coveting, stealing, and threatening to murder. This story probably occurred in the early part of the period of the Judges. The second story is in Judges chapters 19 through 21. It's a story of immorality and anarchy. It also probably occurred during the early period of the Judges, since Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, is mentioned as the priest in chapter 20, verse 28. To summarize this story, a Levite from the hill country of Ephraim went to Bethlehem in Judah to woo back his concubine that had returned home. After being delayed there for 5 days, he began his trip back with her to his home. They needed to spend the night along the way and stopped in Gibeah in Benjamin just after the sun set. He received no hospitality from the Benjamites, but a man from Ephraim who was living there took him in. That evening, certain sons of Belial, evil men, came and demanded homosexual relations with the man, but the owner of the house objected. Instead, he offered his own virgin daughter and the man's concubine to, quote, ravish them and do whatever you wish, unquote, but they were to leave the man alone. They did do what they wished, and they raped and abused the concubine all night so that she died on the doorstep the next morning, chapter 19, verses 22 through 26. When her master found her dead body the next day, he took it home and then cut it into 12 pieces and sent one piece to each tribe, chapter 19, verses 27 through 30. He got the desired effect, and 400,000 foot soldiers gathered and heard the Levites' detailed story. They decided that those who did the crime were to be punished, chapter 20, verses 1 through 11. They called on the sons of Benjamin to deliver the men, but instead they defended them, and 26,000 of them gathered to battle the rest of the tribes, chapter 20, verses 12 through 16. After a series of defeats in which Israel lost 40,000 men, they were able to conquer Benjamin when the Lord struck Benjamin and 25,100 of them died. They then destroyed all the cities of Benjamin, chapter 20, verses 17 through 48. That only left 600 men of Benjamin alive. Now that created a new problem, for they had all sworn not to give their daughters to Benjamin in marriage, and the tribe was in danger of being cut off. Their solution to the problem was to destroy the town of Jabesh-Gilead because none of them had taken part in the war with Benjamin. This would let only the virgin daughters survive, and they would be given to the Benjamites as wives. They did this, but there were only 400 of these women instead of 600, chapter 21, verses 1 through 15. Well, the next solution was for the remaining Benjamite men to lie in wait at the feast of the Lord in Shiloh and capture wives from the daughters of Shiloh when they came out to take part in the dances. That is what they did, so that the men of Benjamin returned to their inheritance and rebuilt their cities and lived in them. Israel did well under Joshua, but without a continuing strong national leader, they quickly degenerated. The children were not taught diligently the law of God, and instead many were actually married off to the heathen people that were in the land. The result was disobedience to the Lord, idolatry, immorality, and anarchy. People do not do well when they do what is right in their own eyes, because they have a bent to sin. Even those that strive to do good things will do evil things because of their ignorance and the human ability to justify one own sin while condemning the sins of others. Romans chapter 2 explains that well. Man has not changed since that time. The lesson of Judges needs to be applied to our own lives and to our society. For us, as individuals, we see the absolute necessity of knowing and obeying God's commandments ourselves. It cannot be doing what is right in our own eyes. It must be doing what is right in His eyes. If you are going the direction of God's curses, then it is time to repent and go the other way. God is merciful and gracious to both forgive and bless if you will repent and follow Him. For our society, the same is true. Those of us who are a little older and those who study history know that our own society is quickly degenerating because of an improper and perverted emphasis on individual rights and freedoms instead of a proper focus on God's commandments and responsibilities that arise from them. When people do what is right in their own eyes, they will lie, cheat, covet, steal, squander, neglect, hate, abuse, and exploit if it will get them what they want. They will even murder their own unborn children to avoid the inconvenience, and murder the elderly and infirm in order to get their property. If you're not diligently teaching your children and others the way of the Lord, then you are contributing to the degradation of our society. Our nation is in great need of revival, but that means diligent prayer and proclamation of the truth on our part. Complacency only contributes to societal decline. Don't let yourself be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. Know the Lord and follow Him.